Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the General Government and Transportation Committee. It's Tuesday, January 30th, year 2001. And at this time, I would like to open another informational meeting, and I think it's been an important part of our getting the committee up to speed and looking at particularly some ideas as to issues we may be dealing with this session. And so at this time, I'll do that. And at this time, I'd like to ask Gene Wilkinson to come up from Oregon Farm Bureau.
Oh, okay.
Great timing, huh?
Gene, we'll have to have you air here every time, so you, when you just sit down, they all come in.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, it works that way. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. Chairman George, members of the committee, my name is Jean Underhill Wilkinson. I'm one of several associate directors of governmental affairs at the Oregon Farm Bureau. I've been with the Oregon Farm Bureau, I think most of you know me, but just in case, I've been with the Farm Bureau for only about a year now, and part of my responsibility is transportation. The farming community, from the Farm Bureau standpoint, has several interests in transportation this legislative session, and I can go through those with you quickly. I appreciate you inviting me here today to testify and share with you our thoughts on transportation bills that have been introduced so far and our concerns. Although I've only been with the Farm Bureau for about a year, and transportation issues are newer to me, I do have an extensive farm background. My parents are dryland wheat farmers in Wasco County, that's south of the Dalles. And I worked on the farm for many years growing up and hauled a lot of grain to and from Cargill Incorporated, so I am familiar with some of the transportation needs of the farming community. I guess I'll just start from the top and just go through right quickly and won't spend a lot of time on this. One of the issues that has been brought to our attention is House Bill 2143, so you may or may not be seeing that coming across to the Senate. It has to do with federal safety inspections. The federal government did an audit of ODOT's programs and discovered that there is a statutory exemption for farm-plated trucks when it comes to the state conducting inspections for compliance with federal safety standards. And the federal government informed ODOT that they were concerned about that exemption and demanded that if that exemption is not removed at some point in time, then the federal government would withhold grant money that they give to ODOT every year to conduct its inspection program. It amounts to around $4 million per biennium. We recognize that that's a problem, and it's not going to go away, and it needs to be addressed. The agriculture community, as I've been speaking around the state with different ag groups, and I brought this issue to their attention, and they are very, very concerned about it because it, in all practicality, would subject the farming community to a whole set of federal regulations that and inspection for compliance with those regulations that doesn't happen now with farm-plated trucks. So our plan right now, and we've been communicating closely with ODOT and the U.S. Department of Transportation, and our current plan is to put a study group together for the interim. The federal government has told us that we have until the year 2003 to solve this problem before they would withhold those grant funds from the state. So we plan on introducing another bill soon on the House side that would put a task force together during the interim to explore the options on solving that issue.
Gene, before you go ahead, is American Farm Bureau dealing with the new administration on the idea of maybe backing that regulation back? Because what bothered me about this was when we did the tour down to Woodburn Inspection Station, we were asking them about, you know, why they didn't pull more trucks in for inspection, and they basically said they were at capacity. And I believe it was Senator Messerly asked the question about voluntary inspections where you might bring your own farm truck in and get an inspection. At that time, Senator, you helped me with this. Senator Messerly, I'm referring to a question you asked when we were at Woodburn about the ability of our inspection system to actually, you know, do a at-request farm truck inspection. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but the indication was that that was really exceeding their ability to inspect, didn't really want to be burdened with it. What has been the reaction that Farm Bureau's had, and do you actually think that anything may happen at the federal level?
Chairman George, members of the committee, we are working on that. We are working closely with other ag organizations and bringing this to their attention, especially the Oregon Wheat League, and we are having conferences with on the federal level just almost as we speak to try to solve this issue there. Can I ask, were these federal inspection offices or state inspection offices?
No, this was our state port of entry at Woodburn.
Oh.
And so,
what the response was from the Oregon Department of Transportation was that they had limited resources, and so they targeted those resources to random inspections. And so that they thought that was the most effective use of their limited resources, rather than having them, you know, on demand or on call or on demand for any additional voluntary inspections.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Messman.
And thank you for bringing this to my attention again, because what I was really inquiring about was, could they have a license or a contract with repair shops to do the inspections for them, as opposed to the state having to hire? I think the community, the farming community, would be willing to pay for this if they didn't have to drive many miles or take time out of their work schedule to have their trucks inspected at the state facility. So when you get to rural Oregon, it's very difficult to find an area that will inspect them, period. But I think there's a solution to this if the department would like to look into it more.
Mm-hmm. Senator Messerly, thank you. I agree with you completely. That's why I thought this House Bill 2143, that the agriculture community is not prepared for it yet. If we need to have some sort of inspection program going on in the state, we need to bring in farmers who run these trucks to come in and discuss what the options are for potentially conducting a state program, such as off-season inspections or allowing you to unload before the inspection occurs, so we don't have trucks with perishable commodities sitting out on the sides of the roads. And those are exactly the type of issues that I would expect an interim task force would discuss.
Mm-hmm. Sure, one more.
Yes.
And maybe you said this, Jane, but I just didn't hear it when I was talking to my staff, but from my experience in the agriculture industry, they're not looking, not trying to say at all that they encourage unsafe trucks on the highways. They're very concerned from their insurance and their liability standpoint that their trucks are also safe. So I just wanted to put that on the record.
Yes, Senator Messerly, I agree completely. Being a farm girl myself, I know that my parents, for example, were very concerned about safety. They had a lot of young people, including me, driving those trucks. Safety is a huge concern. But with the federal regulations, they are a bit confusing. It's about 500 pages worth of regulations that the farm-plated trucks would have to adhere to. And they include many very specific equipment criteria and driver criteria as well. So it really is something that the farming community is taking seriously and needs some more time to discuss the options.
Okay,
I'll just run over a couple more things and I'll be done. With regard to all-terrain vehicles, we have had a lot of membership asking why ATVs cannot be used legally on highways. As the farming economy changes and we have to farm and ranch more intensely, for example, herding cattle nowadays, they're herded on a very progressive, intense fashion, and those cattle need to be moved around quickly. In the field crop type of production, we have to use chemicals very carefully, and a lot more spot spraying is occurring, and ATVs are increasingly being used on farming and ranching businesses here in the state. And ease of changing location of those ATVs is really, really needed. And from going from field to field, just as you would move your equipment, you don't have to put all your equipment on the back of some, you know, semi-truck or something. You just take it out of the field, and under certain criteria, you take it out on the highway legally and take it into your next field. The same thing needs to happen with ATVs. Hmm. And so we'll be looking for a bill. I believe that Senator Dave Nelson, that's a high priority for him, and he is going to be introducing a bill that would legalize ATVs under certain criteria mm-hmm. when those ATVs are used for agricultural purposes.
This will be an SMV on the back type of thing where it would be clearly identifying that it was a farm vehicle?
Senator George, I'm not sure. Our first idea was to include ATVs as an implement of husbandry, mm-hmm. just as the same classification that equipment falls under.
Right.
I'm not sure if Senator Nelson has chosen to go that route. I saw an old LC draft, and I haven't seen a bill being introduced yet.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what it looks like.
It's very needed, because I'm going to give you an example. Saturday I was in at St. Paul at Ernst Hardware, and there was a 48-footer unloading farm vehicles out of the back, and every one of those were ATVs that were equipped with spray rigs and distributing equipment, and you name it. They were probably being prepared for the farm show is what they were. But there was an enormous number of tools that were present on those pieces of ATVs that were obviously designed only for the farm. They were farm machinery. And, it, you know, when we first bought the first of those things years ago, everybody said, what are you going to do with that thing? This is going to be, every farm is going to have one of these
right.
really soon. And at that time, Internal Revenue wouldn't buy the idea they were a farm vehicle. Now they do. Everyone has these things in many times, many of them. And it certainly is an issue we need to deal with, because there were people who are out on the road right now with them. And we just will either determine that that's a serious violation, or number two, if it's an agricultural operation, should be permitted.
Mm-hmm.
Look forward to the bill.
Another bill is House Bill 2561. It's regarding sifting loads. Actually, in Yamhill County in particular, we've had requests on this from all over, but in Yamhill County in particular, there were a number of trucks that were stopped because right now, under law, there's a zero tolerance for solids, farm commodities, blowing out of trucks. Right now, in statute, there has been implemented a permit process that farmers can go through for some sort of flexibility on allowing fluids to drain out of trucks when you're taking a commodity from farm to market, such as pears. Just name one that might be leaky. But with hauling silage and hay and other things where you have a limited amount of stuff blowing out of the trucks, there's really a zero tolerance under law right now. The farming community would like to have some permit process be put in place where they can go to their road authority and acquire a permit to allow some solids to blow out of the trucks, as long as that permit can be revoked if they're jeopardizing public safety or other vehicles on the road. Okay. And last, House Bill 2562, has to do with driver's license restrictions. As you may recall, last legislative session, there was law put in place where within the first year of acquiring your driver's license, you are restricted on the age of the passengers you can have in the vehicle with you. Well, again, this not only trucks, but pickup trucks and other vehicles are an important use for farmers, especially in the harvest season and off-harvest season, to change sprinkler pipe and fight fires. Farmers really need the flexibility to allow young folks that might be working on the farm to transport other young people from field to field and from job to job. And not allowing a 16-year-old driver to transport another driver that's under 20 really puts an additional burden on the farming community. Potentially other employers would be interested in this too, when those young people are driving the vehicle for employment purposes. It's not for fun. It's for work. So that is House Bill 2562. You might be looking for that. I have listed Here, we're going through the transportation bills now. The Farm Bureau has a special transportation committee, which is meeting this Thursday, to go over some of the other bills that have been introduced. We will be taking positions on a number of those bills. Just a few of them are listed there for you at the bottom. And we look forward to working with you throughout the remainder of the session. Thank you.
Ms. Jean, any questions? Okay, thank you very much. Next person is part of our informational meeting, Craig Campbell, representing AAA Oregon and Idaho.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Craig Campbell, and I'm here representing AAA. And what I thought I would do is just briefly go over the major issues that AAA is going to be watching and trying to become involved in as you proceed with your work and as the legislature proceeds. The first and probably what has most recently been primarily associated with AAA is the concept of a 2-cent gas tax. We quite frankly are under no real disillusion about a 2-cent gas tax and what kind of a chance it has. We've had an opportunity to discuss the gas tax with a number of legislators, with leadership, with the governor's office, and with a number of the players. And thus far, we get a lukewarm response, but we really haven't been given a firm no, we're not going to do that. As we promised when we referred House Bill 2082 to the people after the last legislative session, we promised that we would find out what it was that the people would support and then come back with that as a recommendation. 2 days after ballot measure 82 went down, we polled the people statewide, and it was a more poll. At that point in time, it indicated that the public was willing to support a 2-cent gas tax with a 54% in favor and a 43% opposition. And so on the basis of that, we decided to start discussing the concept of a 2-cent gas tax. One thing that you'll also note on here is under the transportation improvement proposals in the sheet that I've provided, the second one down also talks about a $10 per year registration fee increase. That actually was more popular than the 2-cent gas tax increase, but it didn't raise as much money, and so we thought we would come forward with the 2-cent. After meeting with the governor, we understand that whatever comes forward, if anything is going to move forward, it would have to be very, very simple, which means 2-cent commensurate increase in weight mile tax, no bonding, basically using it for maintenance and preservations and things like that. We found that the more you add to a package like this, the more difficult it becomes. So, with the caveat that we don't know if it's going to go anywhere, we will continue to keep you updated as to what our progress is with our discussions, and hopefully we'll get an answer one way or the other before we expend a lot of effort on it, and then we'll give you that result as well.
Craig, while you're there, I find the number very interesting, the $52 million raised annually, and we just got the report in from ODOT reflecting about $50-plus million worth of damage from studded snow tires, and I hope as you guys are out there, point out to everybody, hey, you can either get a 2-cent a gallon gas tax increase, or we can just stop doing $50 million a year's worth of damage to the highway. And I think it'd be a good sales point.
Mr. Chair, it's a little bit out of my order, but I'll go ahead and take it since you brought up the issue, and that's the question of studded tires. As you may know, AAA has traditionally been opposed to a ban on studded tires. Now, I've not heard any discussion about a ban on studded tires, but I have heard about a studded tire fee or permit sort of a process. Generally, AAA, AAA's understanding is that about 10% of the people who use tires use studded tires. So the damage that's done by studs is really being done by 10% of those motorists, and it's being paid for by all motorists. In a cost allocation study, 100% of the damage that is paid for by ODOT comes right out of the gas tax. So there is going to be some room for discussion that AAA would like to participate in looking at those options. We want to make sure that those folks who live in Central Oregon and Eastern Oregon aren't hindered by the bill because, quite frankly, they need it a heck of a lot more than we do in the Valley. But AAA is more comfortable with the idea of the alternative tires that are available on the market that actually do a fairly good job where studs have traditionally been used. So we're much more willing to enter into that discussion and hopefully can be supportive of whatever comes out.
Yes, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Has AAA done any studies on where the greatest amount of road damage is? It's my understanding the greatest amount of road damage is done on the I-5 corridor. Do you know have any figures to do with that along those lines?
Mr. Chair, Senator Clarno, I do not.
Mm-hmm. The Oregon Department of Transportation did conduct a study, and it does have that sort of data within it.
Is it true, then, that greatest amount of road damage?
Well, I haven't thoroughly reviewed the study. I am pretty sure that the vast majority of the expenditures for mitigation of studded tire damage is occurring within the Willamette Valley.
I just think it would be interesting to note, maybe perhaps what we need to do is allow them in eastern Oregon where the snow areas are and not on this side of the mountains. But we'll go into that later. Thank you.
Yes, Senator, that is a major consideration, and we'll get you a copy of that study, too, because there was a lot of detail in there relative to where they sampled and where they measured damage.
And my comment was relating to where the expenditures were occurring, but as far as where the damage is actually taking place, I'd have to review the document again.
Thank you. Senator.
The other issue that AAA is interested in engaging in actively is the concept of alternative fuels to the gas tax and diesel tax, because, as you know, both of those being fuel taxes, over time fuel efficiency is going to wear away at their ability to raise the kind of revenue that they have in the past, not to mention the loss we have in inflation during every year period. So AAA is interested in entering the discussion about an alternative fuel option. You'll notice that that when we polled what those alternatives should be with the public, right now it's something from I don't like it to over my dead body. So there is a process that I think we need to go through to make the public comfortable with a viable alternative, but a viable alternative is going to be needed. It may not be 10 years from now or 20 years from now, but unless we start now testing out what's available, then, of course, in the long run, we'll be caught flat-footed if we're not careful. So AAA would like to offer its support in any of the discussions that are going on around that issue, and would like to be supportive of whatever comes out on that.
And we will transfer your polling data to the work group that's going to be looking at that, because that's a long ways to go when you look at some of these numbers at 80 to 90% no, and realize there will be quite an education process.
Mr. Chair, you might note that as you go down the list, those things that are least popular are those things that most people have not heard about. I mean, people, even though they're opposed generally to the idea of tolling, they're more comfortable with that than some other ideas because they're familiar with the idea of tolling. Other things like annual mileage fees, things like that, they're not familiar with that concept. So part of it may be, I hate to say this because it sounds so terribly cliche, but it may be partially due to an education process. There are two other issues that I wanted to present as part of AAA's policy work during this session. One is the weight mile tax fix. We've been supportive of the weight mile tax fix bill for the last three sessions. It has never gone anywhere, and my understanding is that there may be a chance that we'll move this session. Quite frankly, the weight mile tax does not need to be as burdensome as it is. Quite frankly, by implementing some technology, you can essentially deal away with the recording and requirement record-keeping burden that's associated with the weight mile tax. And although that's probably not something we can do from square one, it's something we ought to start moving toward. But there are some things in the bill that I've seen that definitely reduce some of the paperwork. And quite frankly, the goal is to measure a fair tax, not to create paperwork. So to the extent that both of those goals are consistent, we're going to be very supportive of that effort and again, offer our assistance there. The final issue that I wanted to bring before you really is not something that I think the committee is going to be dealing with, but at least you may be interested in knowing. And that is the lawsuit that's been filed by the American Trucking Association that challenges the constitutionality of the flat fee and the farm plate exemption. AAA, as of last Thursday or Friday, Judge Abernathy approved of AAA's motion to become an intervener, and we are now a party to the lawsuit. We will be doing our own legal work and presenting our own arguments so that you know that it's not just ATA and not just the state, but AAA will also be trying to defend those taxes as well. So we'll continue to work in that direction as well. Other than that, I'm sure there are other small issues that will come up from time to time, and I would love to come back and talk to you about them, but that's a good general overview, I think, of where AAA is thus far.
Any questions? Yes.
Yeah, Craig. AAA did a great job in their the referral process with the last bill. So successful, everybody in my district is totally convinced we don't need to raise taxes. 89%. So, have you talked about using your experience, effective experience with the process, to put an initiative out to raise the gas tax? Because frankly, I don't know about my colleagues. I'm not going to be doing it because you convinced my people very well that we shouldn't be doing it.
Senator George, Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, that's a a point well taken. We did a good job in our referral. I think that it would have gone down anyway, but AAA's message of the inequities within the process and the unfairness of it certainly rang true. So that made our job that much more difficult during the session. Now, about the idea of initiating a gas tax, the fact that we have polling that shows that the public in a poll would be willing to support a gas tax does not necessarily translate to being willing to vote for one if you actually put one on the ballot. In fact, my understanding is that there's never been a gas tax in the state of Oregon that's ever been passed by a vote of the people. So it's something that's going to have to be done by the legislature in the hopes that the polling shows that it really isn't worth anyone's time to refer. A 2-cent gas tax, quite frankly, is one of those things that doesn't get anyone very excited one way or the other. It doesn't make people too angry, and it doesn't really satisfy the needs of the roads. So it's one of those things that's really more usable as fixing hunger pains for the transportation system than any long-term real solution. So trying to put something like that out for a vote of the people, first of all, I don't think it would pass if we did. And that's, I think, our main answer is we don't want to do anything that's going to further put a nail in the coffin.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, certainly.
But I think you appreciate the fact that you're not going to find very many people in this body who are going to be telling their constituents to raise gas taxes again after the campaign. I mean, regardless of the need, and I think the chair and we've talked about some other things, we do need to look at financing, how we're going to finance roads going forward. The issue, I think, is pretty well ingrained. I got it interesting about your point here on your poll where you said, I could support higher taxes if everyone pays their fair share. 64 agree, 26 disagree. The problem is, Craig, and I think as you know, these people think they already are paying their fair share, and it's somebody else who should be paying. I'm just saying it's a problematic situation here in terms of actually thinking that the legislature is going to stick itself out on a limb and ask people for taxes after a vote is soundly defeated as we had last year.
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, the more people we talk to, the more firmly we are finding that to be the case.
Well, they were bipartisan on this one.
Well, and it may be defense of AAA, Craig, I want to tell you something. I think there's two things came out of that. Number one is that everybody recognizes that the tax on trucks should be fair. There should be any shifting to Oregon-based trucking companies. That's a message I keep hearing. The other idea, too, is to recognize that when it comes to taxes in the state, we want to be making sure that the money is being well spent. That's a message we heard over and over again. Polling indicated that. But the good news about it is that it has pushed us, given us a window of opportunity to deal with fairness for trucks and in a streamlined system. The other thing I believe that it's done is it's given us an opportunity to step back and say, where are we headed as far as gas tax collections? And any of you that had a chance to see the Cascade policy presentation at lunch, I think they're right on when they say, you know, we're going to collapse. So the funding mechanism as far as gas tax dependency will collapse in the near future. And therefore, because of the fact of the vote of the people, we're now being forced to look at brand new ideas that maybe we wouldn't have had the opportunity to do that if we'd been fighting over gas tax. So we'll see how it goes and see how what we do.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I saw you there.
Well, did you see that?
Oh, yeah.
I was
interested because I do have a bill that does some of the things that we talked about down there today on privatization and also toll roads. So I hope it comes before this committee and we'll have a chance to discuss it a lot.
We had someone in our office just before we came up here, and it's two county commissioners, and they're talking about a private company willing to build a bridge for us that would be a great asset. The person basically commented that if their estimated cost was this amount of money, and if in fact what we had estimated, the state cost, that they could offer free lattes for the next 20 years for the bridge. So the good news is that there are some innovative type of thought that is occurring in the building, and we're glad to see it. Any further questions? Craig, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to close the informational hearing. I'm going to open a work session, and the purpose of that is possible introduction of committee measures. Now I don't know if you've had a chance to do those, but I want you to know right now that I will not try to run over you with any committee measures. So if anyone has any heartburn, these will become my bills, and so I have no problem. And with that, Patrick, go ahead and describe them, and we'll let you decide what you think about them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would you like me to read them one at a time and then discuss them one at a time?
The bill or
no, 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 no.
No.
Would you like me to provide a summary of each
summary
of them?
Summary of each
or,
one, yeah.
Okay.
Let's
all
do
right.
one at a time.
All right. The first legislative concept 1352 would require drivers to use headlights whenever the vehicle that they are traveling within is on a highway within the state at any time. So what this does is presently drivers are required to use headlights only during hours of darkness. This legislative concept would require drivers to use headlights during the daytime as well.
Okay.
Is there a, Mr. Chair,
mm-hmm.
is there a penalty? I haven't had time to read the whole thing. Is there a penalty or how is this enforced or what?
Violation of ORS.
Oh,
I'm
not
calling that
right.
must be the penalty.
Okay. All right. In ORS 811.520, what?
525. What is the class of violation?
Yes. 11.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you look it up for this one?
I did not look up the class
I'm
violation
sorry, neither did I.
On this one. So I can...
Well, I have no problem with this. I just don't want some agency coming in and saying, because we've done this, now they need more money to fund the implementation of this kind of... You see where I'm going?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I don't have a problem. I just want to be sure we're not sitting on two budget committees. I'm very well aware of coming to say, well, now you guys wanted this, so now we've got to pay for it by adding this many more FTEs.
That's correct. And, of course, we're sitting on revenue not seeing that going up either. So very strong concern about that. Are there any objections to it? A lot of the things we're going to be looking at will be brought in here. They're either going to fly or they're not going to fly based upon their merit.
I understand. Okay.
And Senator Clarno, I can certainly get that information to you.
Okay. Without objection. Okay. The next one is?
Question.
Oh, yes.
Are you asking if there are objections as for this to become a committee bill? Is that what the question is?
That's correct. That's correct.
And I would like to make sure, even that, though the committee might be sponsoring the bill, that again, if it would not violate any mandates to them back with others, that if we're going to carry it as a committee bill, then, Mr. Chairman, our chair is in trouble with the president tonight. I'm sure we've not.
That is absolutely correct. This does not bind you in any way. In fact, if it comes back and we don't like the provisions of ORS,
as much as a committee,
mm-hmm.
you know, if it's
no, and that's one of the reasons, that, Senator, I approached this on the basis that if anyone had any heartburn about it, we wouldn't even bring it forward as committee bill. And so, because all it will do, there are no strings attached to these. You'll act on that bill as fully independent as to the hearings we have.
It has to do with safety, but I have no problem with this one way or the other, but I just want to make clear.
Thank you. Patrick, you want to just read the next one?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Legislative Concept 2428. Requires that state agencies proposing adoption, amendment, or repeal of administrative rules, that they must prepare fiscal impact statements reflecting the rule's impact on fair market value of real property in the state. It provides that the statement must provide an estimate of loss of real property tax revenues and income tax revenues attributable to decreased property values. It also provides that the statement also must reflect the impact on state revenues anticipated to result from the reduction in value of state-owned lands, including the negative impact on the common school fund.
We had kind of give everyone a little background on that one. It kind of parallels the concept of Measure 7, but also before that it dealt with an issue in my district in which a decision on Goal 17 would significantly impact a property within the city of Lincoln City. And the thought that we had raised on that was, what is going to be the cost of that local jurisdiction's taxing ability? And the idea being that before we would regulate in a certain way, that we would try to establish what the costs were going to be, local jurisdiction, private citizens, and even state-owned property.
Mr. Chair, one might have one heartburn on this one.
Okay.
Yeah. status of ballot measure 7 at this particular point in time. Because it is
Would you be happy with the idea that if in fact we get some clarification coming in Measure 7 that might be addressing this, that this then bill would then just fade away? Or would you, if you prefer, I'll just go ahead and bring it out as a standby, everyone. We're trying to get that sound to tell us all. Oops.
The gremlins.
All right.
I'm just wondering if there's versus what is already the bill, the status of the ballot measure. That if we carry this kind of community deal, and what is happening in the court, you know, how does that affect that would be my question. Those would be comfortable with that can do that into it.
Senator Messler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To some extent, I share the same concern, but I also have another expanded concern, and that is that another issue, but along the same lines, is as private ownership has changed to public ownership, there's no public information as to what that does to the tax base either. And in my district, at least, we're seeing an awful lot of that now. So I don't necessarily care who sponsors it, but I think if we're going to deal with this issue, we have to deal with all the aspects of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, another result in provides a statement to reflect the impact on state revenues anticipated as a result of reduction of the value of state lands, including negative impacts on common school fund. So you would think even any other local jurisdiction to broaden the concept to make sure that was being measured, a transfer from private to public hands?
What I'm seeing is an awful lot of private property being purchased by federal agencies, state agencies, sometimes for mitigation, sometimes just set aside. But it does have a huge impact if you put all that together as to our base for funding our schools, our counties and cities.
Right, right. Well, would anyone view the bill then, let's just be very candid here, on the basis, and since we're in a work session, we can sort of do this, on the basis of bringing out what issues maybe should be addressed relative to that subject? I mean, the idea of expanding it, because that was my thought and intention, was to make sure we addressed impacts to particularly local governments, not only schools, but of any transfers like this or regulations.
I would prefer, Mr. Chairman, that we address this not in the context of ballot measure 7, though.
No.
Keep it as separated as we possibly can.
Separated.
But only in the context of what is the impact to local governments.
Oh, rather than to private citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that would probably be a different bill. Okay, we have an objection then to LC 2428, so that we'll just set that bill aside as not being a committee bill. Okay. Thank you.
If you guys, and that means if just three of you guys are saying it's okay, so I don't want
I'll give you my opinion.
You may see the bill back.
Yeah,
yeah, in a different form.
And maybe Senator Clarno was. Let me just give you my philosophy.
Absolutely.
I have no objection as chair of any committee for us to introduce anything into the pile as committee goes. I mean, it's just a philosophy.
Right.
You know, whether with the understanding that it's neither support or rejection of it, or whether we do anything with it. But in terms of introducing it, just as a philosophy, I have no objection to introducing anything as committee bills.
Okay.
That's just but
I'll be okay with that.
You know.
I too will be okay with that. I think by the time we hear the testimony on the bill, that then we all understand a little bit more, and then we make the decision whether or not we want to. And I understand Margaret's concern as well,
but
Senator Metzger's concern that
It's always been understood that any committee bill never did require us as independent representatives of our constituents to vote for anything.
Yes.
And that even if we all understood, even if we voted for it here, we could have heartburn by the time it got to the floor.
Okay.
And so, okay.
Understood.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and have it as a committee bill. Okay.
Chair, I'd just like to add one more line of caution. I don't disagree at all with what's been discussed, but it is the perception of the public that I'm concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
Are we trying to overturn or do something with ballot measure 7? And,
exactly.
Right.
And that's where my concern is.
Yes.
Right. So as long as it's on the record that we understand what we're doing and not that we're trying to lead the attack or lead the charge on this, I think it would.
Well, you understand the position of the chair, and I don't think that would be the intention. A lot of it is, from my perspective, is an attempt to find out really what are the basis in fact. And so, well, okay, then we'll retract our rejection of LC 2428, and actually will now become a committee bill. Without objection? So ordered. And right now I'd like to open up a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 276. Patrick, tell us where we are there.
Senate Bill 276 repeals the statute requiring the appointment of an aviation advisory committee. During the years when the Oregon Department of Aviation was under the Oregon Department of Transportation, ORS 835.009 required the Oregon Transportation Committee to appoint a 9-member aviation advisory committee to advise ODOT on aviation policy matters. In 1999, Senate Bill 108 separated the Oregon Department of Aviation from the Oregon Department of Transportation. That piece of legislation also required the appointment of a 5-member state aviation board. It did not repeal the statute that requires ODOT to establish the Aviation Advisory Committee. Proponents of this measure contend that Senate Bill 276 would delete an obsolete statutory requirement and clarify that policy guidance for the Oregon Department of Aviation be provided by the State Aviation Board, which is consistent with the legislation passed by the 1999 Oregon Legislative Assembly. There is no revenue impact and no fiscal impact for Senate Bill 276. And I believe we have Ann Crook from the Oregon Department of Aviation to testify.
Welcome again, Ann. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon. I'm Ann Crook, Director of the Oregon Department of Aviation. This should be a very simple bill. It truly is just housekeeping to clean up what we found was, I think, an oversight effect of Senate Bill 108 that created the Department of Aviation. Under the current statute, the way it's written, we would have our new 5-member state aviation board appoint a 9-member aviation advisory committee to oversee a 16-member agency. And we did have an aviation advisory committee that met when we were a part of the Department of Transportation. That committee hasn't been meeting. They have no interest in meeting. The aviation stakeholders are happy with the state aviation board serving that role. And this bill, it will just clean up that loose end. Thank you.
I would like to let everyone know we won't be voting on Senate Bill 276 because we have proposed amendments that would declare the bill to be an emergency. And Ann, do you want to let everyone know why that would be because of not having to reappoint? And
yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. This amendment would declare an emergency, which would make this repeal effective as soon as the bill is signed. Without that, it would be effective January 1st, 2002, and really we would be required right now to reappoint the members of this statewide aviation advisory committee. That really doesn't make any sense.
Mr. Chairman, mm-hmm. Ask a question.
Sure. Yes.
I know everybody does things differently. I know in our Senate Judiciary Committee, Senator Menes is allowing the old rule of conceptual amendments to move things along.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what your philosophy is on that, but if so, I would be happy to move that amendment that we put the emergency clause in now to just save time if the committee wants to move the bill and have it printed thusly.
Patrick, how far were we from having it? I believe they were going to have them tomorrow anyway. We were hoping to have them today, but you know how we all drop a lot of bills down there.
The request for the amendment was provided yesterday, and my understanding is that they were planning to release the amendment tomorrow.
What's the will of the committee? Are you folks
that seems fine with me. I know that some committees that is done, that the bills moved with the amendments conceptually to be added. That's
because, And I feel comfortable with that, and I'll tell you why. And that's the sense that we all know what that emergency clause will look like, and so it's not anything that anyone's going to be doing differently. And what we're doing, a little consultation here to make sure that we haven't established in our rule something different. Senator, would you like to put that in the form of a...
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move that Senate Bill 276 be amended by adding on line 27 an emergency clause allowing the bill to take effect upon passage, subject to the amendment being engrossed during printing, but that we adopt that amendment at this time.
Okay. Did I open up a work session at that point? I said possible work session. I don't think I did.
I did.
Okay, thank you, guys. All right, so we are in a work session, and we have a proposed amendment. I think we can do that without objection. I think I had everyone's approval before that, and without objection. So,
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 276 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Recommendation by Senator Metzger to move Senate Bill 276 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Carter?
Aye.
Senator Carno?
Aye.
Senator
Hatterley? Aye.
Senator
Metzger? Aye.
Senator Ward?
Aye. Senate Bill 276 is now hereby declared passed. And do we have a carrier for that? If not, would you like to do it? Okay, Deb will do that. All right, and I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 276. And thank you. And I'll open a public hearing possible work session on Senate Bill 283. Patrick, tell us where we are.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 283 removes the requirement that municipal corporations contract with accountants from the Oregon Board of Accountancy roster for purposes of developing or revising and installing accounting systems. Oregon statute presently requires municipal corporations to contract with accountants from the Oregon Board of Accountancy for purposes of developing or revising and installing accounting systems. However, computer-based accounting systems have diminished the needs for accountants to develop, install, and revise these systems. Proponents of this measure contend that computer experts and other administrative personnel are capable of installing and monitoring these systems under the guidance and supervision of accountants from the Oregon Board of Accountants, and they also contend that quality control will be maintained for the municipal accounting systems through an auditing process performed by licensed municipal auditors. There is no revenue impact and no fiscal impact statement, issued on behalf of this bill, but there is a comment on a note from the fiscal office that indicates that municipal corporations may realize expenditure reductions if they are able to use less expensive means to install, develop, and revise these accounting systems, but no impact on the state.
Okay. Ms. Carroll, would you like to speak on
that? Yes. And Carol Reed from the Oregon Board of Accountancy is here to testify in support of Senate Bill 283.
Carol, welcome.
They were not available, the software technologies and computer processes that we have today. And the statute requiring accountants, which by that definition is a licensed municipal auditor, to install, revise, or develop accounting systems. The municipal auditor license is an additional license that our board issues to folks who are already licensed as a certified public accountant or a public accountant. So you can well imagine that their services are more expensive, perhaps, than someone else who has some software expertise. So it is felt that this provision is really outdated, that municipal corporations have available to them software programs, computer engineer. Since then, helping install and develop and revise these programs, because if there is no quality control that is involved for instance, because the municipal auditor is still required to review the accounting system as they go through the audit that is required for each of these corporations. So there will be no loss of quality, but there may be some cost savings to the municipal corporations as a result of this change.
Have questions, Chair?
Oh, yes.
Thank you. Just a question. So has it been practiced because of the statute now that we've moved into the high-tech age where municipalities have been actually hiring accountants who go out and then subcontract the installation of the high-tech and basically becoming a middle person? Is that where the extra cost may be? No, well, you were talking about where we eliminate the contract, the language that they have to contract with accountants and to install these systems. And since the accountants are not experts on installing systems, I would imagine that if the statute required them to hire accountants, they would be hiring them, creating a fee, and then the accountant not having the expertise would then just go ahead and sublet the system itself. And I'm just trying to figure out, you know, when you say there may be savings, that's where I would see it. And I was just curious if that's an accurate portrayal of where those savings might be derived.
Mr. Chair, yes, I think that may be. I think also this requirement has not been broadly known.
So they do it anyway.
Yeah, that's
I think that there has been a system that in response to this measure of understanding that last year's auditors. Questioning us about the
okay.
Yeah. So I think perhaps depending on the size of the municipal corporation, the complexity of their system, the sophistication of the people who are in charge, oftentimes a municipal auditor may have simply recommended QuickBooks mm-hmm. and let it be installed by the corporate. And then the municipal auditor would review the system and he would be audited.
Right.
So I think to some extent, municipal auditors may not have been involved in the process as much as the statute was requiring.
Yeah, I see. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very interesting. Yes, Senator Carter.
What's the impact of not having this bill? What would happen? Everything stay as usual? Is that what it is?
That is George. I should think it might remain status quo. Municipal corporations, perhaps if they are unaware of the requirements, may continue to develop their systems some other way. Having brought the legislative concept has brought it to the attention of at least every one of our licensees. And so our licensees would certainly go to the corporation and say, do you have any revisions just to this system, you know? You're going to have to put it in
and notification now.
Yeah. However, again, depending on the complexity of the system, a corporation may or may not have revisions necessary at this time. It depends on how they have treated them in the past, who's been doing the work for them in the past, they might be able to realize cost savings. I would suggest, as an investor, there are people other than licensed municipal auditors who know a whole lot more about installing computer systems and software. And I think our licensed auditors would recognize that same expertise was not in their area. And so probably the job can be done more efficiently and the municipal auditor may be able to do it.
Good. Any further questions? Okay, Carol, thank you very much. This is once in a while we come across things and we say, gee, we should have done this before, but it's time. Okay, I'm going to say that we're in a work session on Senate Bill 283. What is the desire of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 283 to the floor with a due pass.
Vice Chair Metzger has moved Senate Bill 283 to the floor with a due pass motion. Is there any further discussion? See, not the clerk to call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Senator
Aye.
Senator
Mitzker? Aye. Senator Bill 283 being duly passed will be carried by Vice Chair Metzger. And is there any further business that should come before the committee?
None of our, Mr. Chairman.
None that I'm aware of.
Oh, none that you're aware of, okay.
That's why I asked the question, because I figured I'd be carrying it. I make sure I understood it.
You knew what I was thinking. With that, we'll be adjourned.